Hello and welcome to another episode of the What's Current podcast from NAPIT. And today we're doing one with Andy Duffin, who's not our new boy anymore, but you're still fairly new, aren't you, Andy?
Yeah, it's an introduction to me at NAPIT and my previous background before joining NAPIT, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. So we'll get to the listeners and the watchers can get to know you a little bit now since you've been here, but understand, that, like you say, that journey of where you come from.
Yeah.
So that seems like the place to start, Andy. I mean, this is going to be a weird one because actually when we interviewed you, we ended up with a situation where you'd worked at two other places I'd worked at.
Correct.
I started your career at a particular training provider in the Midlands.
Correct.
That shall remain nameless.
And then we
both worked at Walsall College. You were working for the learner side, the full-time curriculum, and I was working for the employer responsive side. And then we've ended up working together there.
Yeah, so our paths have crossed, but never aligned.
Yeah. And now it's written in the stars.
It was, isn't it? Yeah.
It's great to have you here. Tell us a little bit, Andy, first of all, about that journey. So our listeners can understand, where did it all start for you from leaving school?
So. Okay, so yeah, I left school in 1998. I weren't very academic, didn't know the best options for me. Lucky enough, one of the teachers at the school, her husband looked at the apprenticeships, but it was mechanical apprenticeships.
Okay.
So I got involved on that. So I'd done a couple of months working at a Suzuki garage, doing a mechanical apprenticeship, and it wasn't for me. I just didn't enjoy the role or the day-to-day role, so to speak. And then I went to a local college where Careers Advice Centre there, and I found an advertisement for a training provider in the Midlands, in Birmingham. So I went to there and had an interview. You had to do a maths and English assessment. You had to do a colourblind test as well at the time.
Remember those?
It was like the doctor, you had to find the numbers So I had to do that. If you passed the English assessment and the maths assessment and the colourblind assessment, what they would do then would put you on their system and then they'd find local companies. You go to have interviews for apprenticeships,
mm-hmm.
and if you're successful, you get an apprenticeship role, and then they would manage your training.
Okay, so that's quite a unique way of doing it, because normally you think you'd approach a company that would take you on, but that's quite a good way. They sort of find you a placement.
They do. And they still work with that model now.
Yeah,
it's just I don't think there's so many companies out there
taking on.
It's more of a way around.
Yeah,
point now. So lucky enough, they found me an interview at a local. To a contractor company in Aston in Birmingham. So I went for the interview, done the interview and got the role. So I was really happy about that. It was a local company and it was a contracting company that had a domestic new build side. So it done all new build. It had commercial and industrial. And later in the company's era, he got into solar PV as well.
Oh wow, so it's a full-rounded range of work then.
Really was.
Yeah.
So I predominantly started, the company was good in a way that they put you with some electricians.
Mm.
Every month you'd be changing around, you'd go around with some electricians.
Okay.
I started off in the domestic area, so the new build, so it was all Barrett Homes, George Wimpy was called then, which went to Taylor Wimpy.
Yeah.
Redwell Homes, Bowway Homes, so we do all the new build homes, and that's a good learnt grounding.
Mm.
And then we had some commercial jobs as well, so we go on to those as well. We didn't have loads of industrial, I've got to be honest, we'd done one factory unit, that was about it. It was predominantly commercial and new build houses, that was how the business was formed. I predominantly worked on commercial, which was really good for me. Especially for your apprenticeship, because you get that range of work. So you're doing your metal munchings, your basket, your tray,
conduits
and all that. And we used to do a lot of new build apartments or student accommodations up and down the country. So you do the landlord's areas, which will be all your containment systems, and you go inside the flat, and then obviously that would be where your twin earth would be.
So it's a nice mix of both.
Yeah, it really was, and there's some really good electricians I work with. I'm quite fortunate, I'm still friends with them today. Really good apprenticeship in that sense with them. So I qualified in 2002 with them, and then I slowly worked my way through the company. Now, I had a brilliant boss. He would say, do you want to go into the office? Do you want to do a bit of estimating? Do you want to do a bit of design? Do you want to do a bit of contract managing? So he would give you the options, but
yeah.
I didn't really fancy the office. I like being on site and doing the install work. Lucky enough then, we had a QS come and join the company, because a lot of the guys were testing their own work, and the boss and the QS were a bit suspect, from the side of it. So they wanted to get a lead tester, where someone would be appointed the lead tester at the company, and go to all the different jobs and test as many jobs as you can and work alongside the QS. Yeah. Unfortunately, I was fell into that role. So this was probably in my late 20s, start of my 30s, this was. So I've done a good 8 or 10 years on the tools, learning the craft. And then this opportunity came up, and I always liked fault finding anyway. I didn't like a fault beating me. Do you know? I thought, it's tripping, why is he tripping? And you'd find it, and if you repair it, and you feel better then. You sort of save the day, don't you?
Yeah, I think when you step into those kind of roles of testing and fault finding, and I've done roles that are similar, you sort of sit above the, not from an arrogant point of view, you sit above the job because you understand the whole of the job and the way it works and the circuitry and how it's wired.
Yeah.
And when you fault find, you're quite right, that sense of satisfaction from finding a fault and like fixing the problem, you're like, yeah, you are. I sorted that.
Yeah, I
but, that. But it does get you thinking, and I think it makes you a better electrician for it as well.
Definitely, you've got to have a wide scope of all the different wiring systems, and you've got to try and second guess the electrician who wired it, because sometimes that electrician may not be on the site no more for whatever reason. So you got to think, oh, has he gone to that socket first, or has he gone to that?
It's probably the opposite.
Yeah, whatever you think, it's not there. Yeah. You know, so yeah, so I worked as a lead tester with since I was about 30, and then unfortunately, around, I think it was about 2017 we're into now. I don't know if the listeners remember the company called Carillion.
That would have been a big one.
Yeah, we used to do a lot of work with Carillion.
They went bump,
and then unfortunately, they owed my boss quite a lot of money, and he owed out overhead.
Yeah.
So he couldn't run the business anymore. It was a real shame for him, because he was 30 years in business to that day when he went under. And he started, and he started off from the back of his garage, with an electrician
and
he built it up, and he had we'd done some big jobs in the Birmingham City Centre, which obviously you're Brummisty, so you would know, like we'd done the Cube, we'd done part of the mailbox, we'd done the Orion building,
big projects.
We've done those, the old Lee Bank estate on the Bristol Road, which is called Park Central.
Yeah,
we've done all the apartments there and the houses there.
Yeah.
So we had some big old jobs, you know, for a little company, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, started off with nothing. Fair play to my boss.
At that time, how many electricians would have been? Was he sort of medium sized?
Yeah, medium sized. So I was trying to think in the office. We probably had an office down in Aston. I'd say we probably had about 10 staff in the office.
Yeah.
And then I would probably say, with the housing and the commercial aspects, we probably had about 20 or 30 sparks direct on the
company. And then some labourers and apprentices underneath, or improvers, whatever.
Yeah, and like I say, if we won a job and we didn't have enough electricians, we'd have to go to agency.
Actually, you would get subbies involved as well. Like, to get,
and we did have some subbies that worked for us quite a bit as well.
Yeah.
They just prefer being subbied than direct.
Yeah.
They did work on lots of jobs with us, and we'd use them quite regularly. Because subbies do get a bad press, you know, but there are some good ones out there.
They just like that freedom, don't they? Exactly. Like being tied to a company and doing what they want,
And there's nothing wrong with that. So, so unfortunately, Carillion went under at that point, and then took my boss under with them. And we was on that Park Central job at the time, on the last phase. And looking off the company there was a plumbing company, and they took on the M&E package, so I was able to work with them for a little while. And then we had another job with another M&E package company in Birmingham. We had a bigger apartment block in the Birmingham City Centre, and what that company decided to do was cherry pick some electricians from the company that's gone under, because they had this contract and my company was going to do the electrical part. And they took on about four of the office staff and about five electricians, and they set up their own electrical part of the M&E business.
And so you went with that.
So I was unemployed for about 2 weeks. That's not bad.
No, not.
So it didn't really hit me that bad.
I mean,
looking up, obviously redundancy pay, because I've been with them for a long period of time. Yeah. So it didn't hit me that hard. Other people it did hit quite bad with them. So anyway, I'm working for this M&E company, again doing new build apartments, so landlords, wiring flats, and again, we'd go into the testing side of the job. I'd be lead test out, have some testers working for me. And the company were looking for charge hands and foremen. So we had a foreman on there, and I worked as a charge hand. So I'd done the triple STS course.
I remember that, yeah.
So
I
was site supervisor.
I'm just thinking in my head, I remember the days of foreman and charge hands. I don't even think that's a thing in my head. You had a charge hand that was like the right hand man of the foreman,
that's
didn't
correct,
it?
Correct.
He didn't want to come out the site hut, so you were the one running around site checking them back from their tea breaks.
That's it. It was sending me to the meetings that he didn't want to go to.
Exactly, like, yeah. Toolbox talks, yeah, all of that.
Yeah, where the meetings where it was going wrong, where we weren't on track, it was you can go to that one.
You send you in.
So I had all that, and I really enjoyed it. But the company, the A&E company I was working for, they had a lot of contract in Birmingham, in London. And I've done a lot of work in Hawaii previously.
Yeah.
And I love work in Hawaii, but it's sort of a, what we call, a young man's game.
It is, yeah. You know, it's fun at the time, isn't it?
Yeah, if you're single and going to the beer every night, it's great and all that when you're a bit younger and you're coming into the industry, it's a great night out. But I was getting a bit older, I had a wife, my wife was pregnant, I didn't really want to be working away in that lifestyle with it. So I thought, what are my options here now? What can I do? Do I set up on my own and go for that? And I've got a few mates that have done that, and it's hard work, as the listeners will know.
Yeah.
You've got to chase your business, you're working weekends, you can't really say no to work.
And
there's payment issues, you know, people don't want to pay for the work and pay the price. X, Y, Z. So I was like, I don't know, I could give it a go. I don't know about that. But I always enjoyed working with apprentices. We had a lot of apprentices in the company. I always enjoyed that. And I thought, teaching. There's a pull towards teaching.
Yeah.
I thought, that don't sound too bad of a geek.
Yeah.
You know, you're in the warm.
Yeah.
you're not physically doing it. And then funnily enough, the company who had done my training with my apprenticeship with, who got me the job, they was looking for a tutor. So I threw my hat into the ring, sent my CV, got an interview with them, had the interview. And I got fortunate, got the job with a private training provider in Birmingham that work with yourself.
I'm there,
met some really good guys there as well, we're industry friends now with, so it was quite a unique place to work with at the time.
Yeah.
A lot of them are still in this kind of world now as a company.
Yeah.
So it was nice to meet those at that part of my journey. But I always thought to myself, if I'm going to do this, I want to do this properly. I wanted that teaching qualification. And where I was at the private training provider, they couldn't give me that qualification there. The only place you could do that was at an FE provider, a college. So I wanted what they call a DET for it, a Diploma Educational Training. So again, funny enough, the college that I'd done it with, I did do part of my apprenticeship there. So it was Walsall College in the Midlands. They was looking for a tutor. Again, applied for the job. I had to go and do a micro teach.
So I remember those days.
Yeah, I'd done a 10-minute teach on conduit bending, apprentices on there. Went for the interviews, lucky enough, got the job there.
Nice.
So that would have been 2019 just as COVID
was about to hit.
So I started with them, and then looking at my boss gave me about 3 weeks to settle in. And then by the time that I settled in, COVID happened. And then we was all, the college was closed. Lucky enough, we did do some teaching online. But my manager at the time said to me, look, I don't need to teach online because you're new into teaching, so to speak, even though I've done just under 9 months at the training private. He said to me, settle in, just look at courses, build the PowerPoint, look at developing
give some time
resource
to prep
and that.
It's probably a good time to be able to do that.
It was
so
quite
a good time for you to find your feet, really.
It was. But it was
understand the material.
Understand, get my knowledge back together, because anyone that's going in from being in industry and into teaching, science and principles to get your head back around.
You've really got to re-educate
yourself, because all those formulas you have to learn to pass the course, but now you've got to teach them and know them.
You can do a basic cable calc, I reckon, but apart from that, nothing else.
Bit of Ohm's law, you're good to go. Bit of PIV, whatever.
But you're not remembering like inductive reactants.
Excel and all that. In there. So that was a good time. What a bad time as well with COVID going on, and then starting your teaching qualification. So I had to do all that online.
Yeah.
So when you're doing a teaching qualification, you have like lesson observations,
yeah,
where the people educating you come, yeah, and observe you and, yeah, obviously give you a plus or minus where you need to go. Most of my lesson observations in the first year were on Teams.
Oh, really?
And it's a very hard place to
get. Yeah. Don't know if anyone, no interaction in the classroom.
No,
really, like
it was tough.
Strange.
It was really tough, that was. And obviously learning the trade, the teaching trade online, and a lot
different,
of it, yeah, different as, yeah, well. It's really, like anyone that's gone into training or education, how do you educate yourself on theories of behaviours?
Mm.
It's quite challenging for, yeah, people like us who are in industry.
Yeah.
We're not academic.
No.
We don't have to write essays to become an electrician.
You know,
most of our exams are multiple choice. There are some written ones, but we're not looking for 3,000 words.
No.
You're looking for maybe describe a process.
Exactly,
know.
Yeah.
You know,
step by step, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite a different world. So, yeah, so I've done the diploma education of training. So I've done my debt, got qualified in 2022. I was at Walsall College for 4 years and really enjoyed the time at Walsall College. Really did, really great college to go to, great environment to work with. But I was getting an ink to go back into industry. I was teaching, I weren't getting that satisfaction.
Yeah.
Especially teaching a 16 to 19 year old, it's quite a hard gig.
Yeah, you full-time learners.
Full-time learners.
Some of them don't want to be there.
They don't want to be there. They don't know what they want to do in life. That's fine, but you've got to get past a course. And there's a lot of politics in education as
well. Yeah, of course there is, yeah. College system can be like that.
It can
and that's not just Walsall, that's all colleges.
That's all colleges, I could have left Walsall College, went to another college and probably have the same
experience. Same experience,
And lucky enough, I was doing a bit of work on LinkedIn. You know, I was trying to get a lot of employers and manufacturers to come to the college to support the learners. So I think that's really important.
Yeah.
On there, and then I saw this role on LinkedIn advertised, and lucky enough, I had a conversation with yourself.
We did.
That went really well for. I had a conversation, and then got to the interview process. Got through the interview process, and part of the interview had to write an article.
That's right. We put you through the ringer, didn't we?
Yeah, you did put me through the ringer, or for a short period of time as But the article was a good introduction to what I'd have to do
with
the company as well. I think that was a good thing for me to do.
Yeah.
And for you guys to see where I was at as well. Because it's as much as me being interviewed by you, I'm interviewing you as well.
Of course you are. It's to see if it works for you, isn't it?
Yeah, and lucky enough, it was a right thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, when we looked at your journey and I could see where you'd been and what you'd done, like similar, it was scary how close it was, wasn't it?
Obviously,
I've got another good few years, haven't you?
Not many still.
No, it's a fair few now. But I can see that similar journey of that inkling. And what was interesting, you had the same journey as me of thinking, when you make that decision almost, or you're looking for an avenue to come off the tools, you're thinking, what does that look like?
Yeah.
Is it into an office environment of estimated design, which you'd had a little look at and your boss had offered you that at your original firm? But I sort of thought, oh, I could really get into the design. I think that's where I want to go. Yeah. But I don't think I was suited to be in an office, like almost like a 9-to-5.
Yeah.
So I suppose teaching just popped into my head out of the blue, similar to you. And I thought, oh, let's see where this goes. Yeah. And I remember going to exactly the same training centre, having a conversation with a lovely man called Andy. And he said to me, you know, you're straight off the tools. He says, if you prove to me and go away and get your PEPLs at the time, like your licence to teach, you're sort of, you know, I think it's level 2, level 3, whatever it is. If you go and get that, come back when you've got it and we'll have a conversation. And that's what I did. I went to night school and did it and put myself out.
Yeah.
And it was, even at that level, it was a little bit hard.
Yeah.
Because you know, going there on random Tuesday nights, not understanding, I'm in the room with other people like hairdressers, massage people, other building trades, and you've all got to do your little bit, like you say, your micro teach and stand up in front of a class full of people and teach them something. It's absolutely nerve wracking.
It's not something you do in your day to day role. I did a little bit with the charge, Andrew, he's having the Liverton Toolbox talks,
with a bit of heckling from
the lads. Well, do we have to do this? Yeah. Red or sign,
yeah,
or that kind of talk, or you know. But yeah, it's aliens. Stand up in front of a classroom of people, start delivering something.
Yeah.
It's not for everyone.
I'd agree with that. Yeah, I was going to say that. It is not for everyone. It's not everyone's skill set. Yeah. Because what you're imparting really as you get into it is you know, we used to call it pot noodle teaching. So you rely heavily on that PowerPoint structure, don't you?
Yes,
like, it's your comfort zone, yeah, like you're saying. You're going, and you literally are reading off it, and you feel
that's
like
start,
a bit,
yeah.
But as you get into it, you put your own spin, you'll start to use the whiteboard, you'll have other props. And I think then you can see good educators are the ones that, you know, they might have a PowerPoint on for a few images, but really they're not using it.
Yeah, they use it as a reference point to go back to. And I think that what I was taught was to bring your experiences into the classroom.
Your practical examples of what you've done.
Yeah, yeah. Trying to relate the theory to what you've done on the site.
Yeah.
You know, that's where the learner will buy into it the most. Yeah. They can see, oh, actually, you do that on site, not just because it says it on the PowerPoint and that's what we have to do.
And I think you've been there and done it. And this is nothing against other trainers, but I've been in some training sessions myself for CPD, you know, and the person hasn't, I'm not saying hasn't got a clue, but they've not done it. And I think sometimes if you've got your experience of all those years behind you of installing this stuff, you can get that across a bit better. And I think you're more authentic to the learner.
Yeah, I'd always start off with the first week of the college, so it would have been in September, your introduction week. And I gave them my life story, but it's just so they understand that I have been in their seat. I'm an electrician.
Yeah.
You know.
Builds trust.
And a lot of parents just think you're just teachers, but a lot of tutors that teach in construction colleges were on the tools at one point and have got into that industry now.
Yeah, an awful lot.
XYZ.
That you are right. So bring it up to date then now. Obviously, you joined us in the July.
Yeah.
And like, I'm laughing because it's been rock and roll, isn't it? Because
it's been chucking at the deep end, which is good.
And we I purposely did that to some of these guys. I'm a horrible person. No, I'm nice. But I think since you come in July, obviously you're very learned, like the role, obviously the job description of what you needed to do was obviously there, you knew.
Yeah,
but what's that look like in real terms of doing it? What have you been up to since?
So the day-to-day role then, so to speak, so it's a hybrid role as they call it, but predominantly we work from home on there. So if we're working from home, my day-to-day roles will be looking at CPD for the company. It will be looking at the publications that we do, so magazines, webinars, technical articles, any publications that we might be working
on podcasts.
Coming up with ideas for podcasts, social stuff as well, also keeping on top of your knowledge as well on there. So I don't know everything, so obviously I've gone into the technical world, so I need to obviously get my knowledge up to date with other technical people that are in the industry on there. So we have a monthly webinar that we co-host, which you would say,
between me, you and Frank, mostly, isn't it?
So build that as well, to build whatever the topic is, technical articles, build those.
They can be quite challenging, can't they?
Yeah, but I think we're having the background of writing essays does help with that.
Yeah.
And it's good that we look after each other's work, don't we? We proofread and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
We support each other, which was key for me. I thought I'd be left on my own and that'll be...
No,
I
wouldn't do that.
So CPD, we've done the podcast and webinars.
Getting involved in some meetings.
So I'm on a RAG meeting. Which is the Wiring Regulations Association Guidelines. Yeah. That's really good for me to go on there as well. They talk generally like questions that have been asked by members of the public or electricians that Electrical Safety First sort of put on their website.
Yeah. What's that been like being in that? Good experience?
Good experience. You'll probably hear that word imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
Sometimes you feel like, well, because I'm so new into it, do I deserve to be there? But I'm there on credit. I think I got the job on credit.
You do.
So I should, you know, just have the confidence that like, you're there for a reason.
Yeah.
I'm there. And then we get to do some of the nice trade shows as well, don't we, Steve? So the elect shows.
Solar and Storage Live this year was
Installer,
good.
Installer show. So we do a lot of the trade shows as well, which is really good because we get a chance to meet our members.
We do.
And that's really important, I think.
Yeah.
And we try and answer technical questions as best we can for them. And as always, sometimes we might not have the answer there and there at the show, but we generally get contact details and we want to get back to them and support them any way we can.
Yeah, and we do. You've obviously, since we got you involved in the shows, we sort of didn't dive you straight into the first one, but the second one you ended up co-hosting and presenting, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, did the Code Breakers.
What was that like?
The Code Breakers is really good.
Good, it's interactive.
It's a really good one. I don't know if any of the listeners have seen it, but generally we go through the EICRs, go through the C1, C2, C3s and FIs, talk about all that, but at the end that's when it becomes alive, because you get a photo on the screen and then we have a bit of debate with the audience what code you want for that, and we talk about what code we would give, and it's only an engineering judgment from us.
Based on the photograph
we have to put a disclaimer out there that not every photograph is the same, and you could get a different scenario where it might not be a C2, it might be a C1 or C3 for our own
time. I think with coding, a bit of a tangent, but coding can always be quite subjective, can't it, because people will argue over it. C1s are generally quite obvious. I think, you know, if there's access to live parts, then we sort of know what a C1 is, but C2s and 3s. Yeah. It's interesting what the audience says on that one when I've done them before.
And ultimately, a lot of people do want C3s for obvious reasons.
Yeah, and there's a talking amendment for now with FI not being, it's going to be classed as satisfactory.
Yes.
So that will cause a lot of...
I think it was said on the last webinar, I'm not for that one.
No. We've still got time to comment. Yes. 30 November, it's coming quick on amendment four, so make sure you get your comments in there. Yeah, so in general then, I think the role, you've settled in really well and you're enjoying it, the variety of it.
Definitely. I think it was, like I said, I had anything to get back into industry. I may not have wanted to be on the tools so much in Storning, but I wanted to be involved in the industry. I feel like here, we do make a change.
Yeah.
And like the meetings you talked about, the committees that we go on, a lot of people think regulations are there to get people out or catch people out. They're not. They're actually, and this is my mindset going into it now, they actually are supporting.
For safety.
You know, people think, oh, they just bring out a new book every so often to make money.
Yeah.
No, it's because the changes that are going on in the industry with technologies, we need to keep up with it.
Yeah,
and it is into enhanced safety and improve safety.
We've talked about that, haven't we? I mean, you know, again, we've had similar journeys, but when I think about my journey of commercial, industrial, domestic, I dropped into domestic after commercial, industrial, which is the weird way around to it, I suppose, so to speak. But having that, everything was very much on rails to that point. You know, you worked in an industrial world, you had big trays, ladder racks, armoureds, big old cables, high bay lighting, all that kind of stuff, commercial mixture of plastic tube, a bit of twin and earth.
Yeah,
and
cable trade.
Yeah, domestic was twin and earth. But it was all very much of a nuisance. We're in a world now in our trade with this renewables and smart homes where I've never seen anything like it. Yeah. So we're always on catch up, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean,
you mentioned CPD earlier.
I was lucky enough to do a bit of the solar farms with my previous company. And this would have been, I would have been about 30 then. So maybe 2012 sort of era, where the feeding tariffs were quite high. I think the government messed up and they were changing the tariffs.
They slashed them very quickly.
Yeah.
They realised people were making too much money.
We was doing like solar farms, so on the Isle of Wight, where a farmer would have a piece of land and maybe couldn't grow any crops on there or whatever, decided to then put solar panels on there, like 28,000 panels on the farm. We didn't install the panels, we did all the cabling on there. Yeah. It was a German company doing all the panelling, all the fixings for it, and we put all the ducts in and put all the cables in, all the strings to the combiner boxes, and then back to the inverters.
Yeah, it doesn't sound very glamorous.
It wasn't. It was trench.
Yeah, it was trench. A lot of digging.
Yeah, digging in the mud. There was some good money in it. But it was just, that was a new world. Mm. Like you say, people now have, you got used before, you had domestic, commercial, industrial.
Yeah.
And now we've got renewable.
Yeah, it's part of an electrician's role, isn't it, now, I think? And, you know, I think what we've done and what you've seen since you've been here is we're very much promoting that renewables world, but we're promoting it in the right way to say, make sure it's not a race to the bottom.
Yeah.
You know, we've all seen bad installs of general sparking. We don't want to see that with solar panels and batteries, because we've got other dangers there with DC, haven't we? And
well, it's like the DC isolator that we Nagit stances that we have a DC isolator.
Yeah.
You know, others are not doing that.
Yeah.
You know, but we are, and we've done it for a safety reason.
And we've given a reason why. Yeah. So where do you see the? Obviously, you're here now. You're not going anywhere soon. I won't allow you.
No.
So you know, do you see just your journey, like just learning more and seeing where it goes. Excited by.
Yeah. Really, technical knowledge is something I'm keen to improve on, because when you go into education and training, you're sort of teaching the same syllabus.
Rinse and repeat.
Yeah. So you only have to know what you have to know.
Yeah.
Whereas now we're more in the technical world, and technology's changing every day.
Yeah.
To keep up with it, we have to stay on top of it.
Publications
and stuff.
Anything
like
we release.
Yeah. Anything that has to be, you know, to the mark.
Spot on.
Spot on there. So I'm really excited for that. Because I do enjoy that part. I like researching and getting my knowledge up to date.
Yeah.
So I don't have all the answers straight away, but I will go and research it. But the company with Napier, there is definitely some growth in there. There's opportunities as well, which is a good key point.
I suppose what you've seen as well, now you're within the organisation, it's like I probably was guilty of this when I started. You just see them as a competent person scheme.
Yeah.
There's so much more than that, aren't there? There's so many facets to this organisation. It's huge, really.
I think the technical support that we give to our members is really good.
Oh, the technical helpline stuff.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned, when we're on trade shows, it's not full of salespeople. It's literally we're there to answer questions.
Exactly, that's it.
Yeah. We'll sell you a book if you want, but
we'll
chat Sparky all day.
But again, you know, the publications that Napier produce, On-Site Solutions, the publication, the ones that have got code breakers, they're there to help the electrician.
Yeah,
the site.
Of course they are, yeah.
You know,
they're meant to be handy things, but.
You know, so I think that's a really good thing, you know, whether you're a NAPIC member or not, you can still buy them publications.
Yeah.
They're not just for NAPIC members.
No.
So that's supporting the industry. And another thing we work with as well was a NAPIC Foundation, which I forgot to mention.
Oh, you've been doing some of that with Tim, haven't you?
Yeah, so I've been working with the NAPIC Foundation, and they had started the grassroots. You know, we go to colleges, and basically any student can join Napier Foundation, and they get the same perks as a paid member.
Yeah.
The only thing they can't do is sign off work.
Yeah.
But they get access to the webinars, the magazines. They get discounts off the publications.
Yeah.
And it's free.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's fantastic,
isn't it?
You know. So.
That's nice for you, because you're almost going back to your roots of going back into those environments, aren't you?
And you worked in education and training, and I'm very passionate about it, like yourself. It's fundamental.
Yeah.
You need to support the next generation of electricians.
Yeah.
And I feel now you really do that through that.
So it sounds like your role that we got you for is varied, like I say, challenging at times, but at least it's never going to be a dull moment, is there?
No, there's never going to be no workload. There's always, like you say, if I've got a free day, so to speak, I can go and write a technical article, or I can go and learn something technically.
Yeah.
So there's no day where you're not learning something or doing something. And
like
you said, there's so many different avenues that Napier have as an organisation that I have to support, and yourself. Yeah. They're never a dull moment.
No, it's a great company to work with. Well, just from me personally, I'm glad we got you. It's good to have you on board, and I'm looking forward to your growth and your progression to see where that ends up. But you know, obviously, we're there to support you in that as well. And I'm learning off you, so we're always learning.
No, but I feel you've supported me really well as well, Steve. You know,
look at the nice things you say on the podcast. Right, so thanks for joining us, Andy, on that one.
Hopefully
that's been really useful. So thanks for joining us for another What's Current podcast. And I'm not going to say that.
You're not going to say it.
Hold on. He's given me a little bit of a script to say when I'm going to have to do it. He says, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review. And until next time, stay safe, stay grounded, and keep the current flowing.
Keep that current flowing.